you came from? I mean, who got you here? And how? Do you know your people and what they went through? The good, the bad, and the ugly. How they were oppressed on their journey, and when perhaps they became the oppressor. Did they arrive as immigrants, crossing borders in search of a better life, or simply with the spirit of adventure? Or did they arrive as refugees and asylum seekers, fleeing unimaginable life events? Are any of your ancestors native to this country, here for millennia, but pried away from their ancestral lands onto reservations? The history of humankind is a history of migration, sometimes voluntary, sometimes forced, but we are a migratory species. The first known migration of human populations began with Homo erectus, moving out of Africa across Eurasia about 1.75 million years ago. Homo sapiens appeared to have occupied all of Africa by 150,000 years ago. Some members of this species moved out of Africa 70,000 years ago and spread across Australia, Asia, Europe, and by 40,000 BC. Migration to the Americas took place 20,000 to 15,000 years ago, the first migrations. So go back far enough, and there's no disputing that one of your ancestors moved about at some point. Early humans migrated for many factors, such as climate change and landscape change and inadequate food supplies. In short, the desire for a better life for themselves and for their children. That's always been the impulse. Localizing the migration to this country, which is where I'll be continuing to speak, we find that in the 16th century, about 240,000 Europeans entered American ports in the 16th century, the 1500s. In the age of exploration and industrialization, the 19th century, over 50 million people left Europe for the Americas. That's a lot of people. Many left famine and political oppression. Local populations, our Native American tribes, were overwhelmed and overcome, often violently, by the sheer number of those new settlers and their imperialistic attitudes. And we can never forget the involuntary migration of Africans as slaves to this country. Estimates show that 12 million people were enslaved and taken from Africa. 1.5 million died aboard ships coming to this country. And that leaves 10.5 million people arriving in the Americas as slaves from Africa between the 16th and 19th centuries. This country has a troubled relationship with migration. On the one hand, we offer this broad and welcoming narrative that's enshrined in the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse from your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. This quote comes from Emma Lazarus' sonnet called New Colossus. It was for a fundraiser auction to build the pedestal for the Statue of Liberty, which is now there. The statue's on this beautiful pedestal, and that's where we see that piece of her poem. This is in stark contrast to the politics of immigration that continue to this day. Today, in particular, the political conversation is about how big a wall, not how wide a welcome. Those are two very different conversations. And I recently saw a political cartoon that had the Statue of Liberty, and the you could see the writing in that poem on it, with a little asterisk by the bottom of the poem that says, "Offer may vary." How true. They didn't say based on skin tone. Truth be told, we in this country, and perhaps as a species, have always lived with that tension between our impulse toward compassionate response, that wide welcome to draw the circle wide, and our narrow self-interests, which grow out of the propensity towards a fear-based scarcity mentality. We are both migratory and tribal. That's complicated. And we cannot talk about migration in this country without talking about race. Waves and waves of immigrants in the process of Americanization, that process for these European immigrants meant becoming white. That is, separating from the black underclass that they entered into and joining the white supremacy culture, the dominant white elite culture. We have to start with a reminder that whiteness is a social construct. White Unitarian Universalist social activist Chris Crass writes, "Race is not a biological reality, but rather a position within a hierarchy of power based on one's relationship to the state or to the power elite, to those in power. The United States was created as a white nation for white citizens." What that has meant was that each wave of immigrants had to prove their whiteness, then this was clearly never a story for the enslaved blacks in this country who've been systematically oppressed as an underclass for all of their history on this land. But new immigrants, who often fled situations on par with what they saw when they came here and were amongst the freed blacks, they had a choice to make. Fight for inclusion into the white dominant culture or ally with people of color, who they often were beginning their journey in this country with, but who they immediately recognized as never getting a fair chance in this country. Noel Ignatieff spells this out for one immigrant population in his book, How the Irish Became White. Are some of you familiar with that book? It's a very powerful, I've read excerpts from it, it's beautifully powerful. So he talks about the great Irish migration around the potato family, about 1840 through the Civil War. Irish and African Americans had a lot in common and lots of contact. They lived side by side, and they shared many work spaces. In the early years of immigration, the poor Irish and the freed blacks in the North were thrown together, very much a part of the same class, competing for the same jobs. The Irish identified with how the freed blacks were treated because they had come from that same sort of oppression. And in the census of 1850, the term mulatto appeared for the first time, due primarily to intermarriage between Irish and freed blacks. The Irish were often referred to as, quote, Negroes turned inside out, and Negroes referred to as, quote, smoked Irish. So in that time, there was this understanding of ethnically diverse people kind of becoming almost one new underclass. And they were performing the same tasks in society. Ultimately, though, the Irish made a decision to embrace whiteness. They quickly learned that although they came from oppression, in order to succeed, they needed to in turn oppress their closest social class competitors, who were the freed blacks. Or they would stay there amongst that class with the freed blacks. Although it contradicted their experience at home, where they had had this experience of knowing that when they came together, they actually had more power and could create something new and could emigrate and do these things. For them in this country, They had to separate from Black America because they saw the Blacks as still enslaved in many, many ways. So they secured themselves jobs that both groups were competing for. And once the Irish secured those jobs, they made sure Blacks were kept out. They realized that as long as they could continue to work alongside Blacks, they would not be considered any different. And so when the Irish became prominent in the labor movement, African Americans were excluded from their participation. That's the systemic part. It creates a system where another group cannot move forward. It's a painful story. And it's repeated after wave of European immigration, with each wave starting at the bottom, making its way in, and working itself out of association with the Black underclass into white culture. There was a slow, and the other thing that we see happening is a slow expansion of rights for European immigrants, an Americanization process for Italians and Jews and Poles and Irish and Russians at the same time that Jim Crow apartheid is showing up for Black Americans. So we're doing this. This is how new immigrants were assimilated. And in the early 20th century, new immigrants in many cities were more segregated than Black Americans. So they were ghettos of Chinese Americans, ghettos of Irish Americans. I'm looking at people who I know who grew up in some of those types of communities, right? The Italian American section. But by the 1950s, the opposite was true. New immigrants moved into traditionally white communities, and with their neighbors set up racially restricted covenants to create a segregated white society. And then Blacks became primarily in their ghettos in urban areas. So what does this mean for us? It means we need to know our history. We need to know our personal history to learn how our grandparents, our ancestors fared in a balanced way. My grandparents on my father's side came here in the 1920s to live out the American dream. They settled in the Italian ghetto of Camden, New Jersey, where my grandfather Pasquale made Italian ice and bootlegged some wine. They left in 1932 when they'd had three children, my father being one of them, because my grandmother Filomena didn't want to raise children in America. She felt that American culture was a bad influence. Now, my grandfather worked hard and was economically successful and returned to southern Italy with what my brother said is the equivalent of $50,000 in his pocket, which he used to buy farmland in his hometown. I remember him telling me when I was a child in this broken English how they made so much money in the summer that he had to wait until winter to count it. So he lived that version of the American dream, right, in his ghetto in Camden, New Jersey. But they were discriminated against, as all waves of new immigrants were. They were considered dirty, even though they kept an obsessively clean home to try and kind of counter that stereotype. And you all know all the names that everybody called the Italians. I know them. I grew up with them. And the Irish and everything. We know those names, right? Now, when my father, an American citizen by birth, returned in 1959 with a wife and a medical degree that he earned for free in Italy, an incredible privilege, he quickly made his way out of the Italian ghetto of Queens, New York, where he first arrived, and over time worked his way into a town that I grew up in with no Black people and a private club that explicitly denied membership to Jews. Knowing this history both roots me and gives me choice. I have a choice now in my life. I can choose to continue on that pathway, understanding its roots. They did this for me to give me a better life, just like my grandparents did it for them to give them a better life. Or the way to build the beloved community is to understand that with compassion and learn to side with those people who don't have that privilege, who have been denied that privilege. But we need to know our own stories. In a blog post called Prophecy and Reconnection, my colleague Sana Seed, probably Saeed, who's an intern at the UU Ministers Association, took a trip down to the border in Mexico and realized as she approached the border, as she really approached the border passing, all of these memories of her own border crossing came back to her and how difficult that was. And she remembered the story of stories from her grandmothers about India and Pakistan and when that country got divided and the fear in her family around that. And it made it very difficult for her to move forward. But their whole work that they did was on helping people reconnect to their own story. And so she writes this at the end of that, sharing that story about how we can all be prophetic leaders. The prophetic requires healing, along with marches, protests, and the actions. We can't fully engage in a prophetic ministry without reconnecting with who we are and where we came from, without confronting the trauma that's deep within us and engaging in the healing necessary. It requires being in community and taking the risk to step into vulnerability that may open up generational trauma. But reclaiming that power that comes from the grueling and transforming work is worth it. So I ask you, how might reconnecting with your own family histories of migration, the good, the bad, and the ugly, inform your choices and help you engage in the prophetic work that's needed to build the beloved community. May this be our promise and our prayer.